Oh, God. I've gone and robbed a bank. What I would like to see is Pogacar come over.
There's no amount of money that would allow him to come over.
Bikes are annoyingly addictive.
So much, yeah.
Well done. You've got into bikes. You've now got no money left over.
You know, how do you ride your bike not to reduce your prison sentence? Is it?
I think it's one of the best things that's happened to Enduro in a number of years.
Welcome to this week's Global Mountain Bike Show. This week, we're talking about a massive bike race that happens in France. Not sure what that is. We're talking about government incentives to get pedaling your bike. They're going to pay you in food, in money, and in reduced prison sentences. Good news all around. And we're talking about something that could well be the shot in the arm that enduring racing needs. I'm joined this week by Fergus and Rich.
How are we doing, buddy?
Rich, stop picking that scab.
Oh, I can't help it.
Starting off with the Tour of France. Have you heard of this race?
Tour de France.
It's kicking off. It started this week, 3 weeks long, of course. And we're going to talk about who the roadies think their messiah is. Tadej Pogačar, basically the greatest of all time roadie. He is a very successful racer, should I say. And how he might stack up compared to mountain bikers' greatest cross-country racer of all time.
Who is?
Nino Schurter. So I think it's quite interesting. Do you follow the Tour de France, you guys?
No.
I wouldn't say follow it. Yeah.
No, I haven't got time to follow a three-week-long race.
It's obviously...
And it's good, but...
It is the biggest bike race in the world because it is so tough as well. The 3 weeks long, it is savage.
Yeah, one day rest, isn't it, I think, in between.
And they work in teams as well, so it is definitely a different flavour to anything that mountain biking has. What could we compare it to? What's the nearest mountain bike race?
I've gone in my head. What do you think, Ferg?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, multi-days, I think like trans races that we see in
Cape
Enduro,
Epic.
But, that'd be the
Cape
one,
Epic for me is the most similar in terms of like it's pairs, it's multi-day, it's brutal conditions, hard tracks. That's what I would compare it to probably.
Yeah, I guess so. But it's difficult to really compare, I suppose. Yeah. But I think it's really interesting. Tadej Pogačar is an amazingly successful racer, as is Nino Schurter. So I thought we'd put the stats to work here. Actually, World Championships, Tadej's got 2. Nino Schurter's got 10. Olympic Games, 1 bronze medal for Tadej, 3, 1 of every colour for Nino. And then we've got 4 Tour de France titles and 1 Giro d'Italia. Mm. But Nino's got 9 World Cup overall titles, which is, I mean, can we compare those two? It's different.
Yeah. Sort of. Same, but not, yeah.
Tadej's got 120 pro road wins. Nino's got 36 World Cup wins. So not counting all of them there, but 120 is pretty good.
There's a fair few.
They do more racing, though.
They do a lot of racing, don't they?
It's worth kind
of... Well, like, does he? Because he's obviously at the top level. I'm not sure how much they actually do.
I think they just do World Cups, don't they? They'll focus... I mean, look at downhill, they'd only race...
Classics. Yeah, okay.
I think it gets interesting when you start looking into the physiology of this. So obviously the weights are different as well. Actually, Nino Schurter, so cross country, you know, back in the day used to be 2.5 hours, something crazy, didn't it? And they reduced it right down. So as they did that, riders have got heavier. They've got pretty muscly, really.
Grr.
So to compare the two is quite difficult because Tadej Pogačar he weighs around 66 kilograms, 65. And his functional threshold power is about 415 to 420 watts.
He's
very, very lightweight. Nino is obviously heavier, stronger. He weighs around 67 kilograms and a FTP of about 385. But, and this is where one of the big buts is, I followed him years ago. Me and Blake went over.
It's good going.
And we did. Well, I tried for part of the video. He was doing his VO2 max intervals. I was like, Blake, you just do yours and we'll compare those two. I'll try and sit on his wheel and see what happens. Obviously, what happens is he's trying to pedal up the first hill. And he's at his VO2 max and I am way above mine.
You're exploding.
Exactly. But the difference is, obviously, he does that. And it's not like on a road bike where he might just turn around and cruise back down and does another one. He actually drops into a really techie, proper downhill track in Kur in Switzerland. He's on his cross-country bike, obviously. So he's not really recovering at all. He's then smashing very fast because I tried to follow him down there as well, which is pretty full on when I'm at 100% of my heart rate and he's somewhere a lot lower.
Yeah. But he's also working on like his technical skills in that sense, isn't he? It's a combo session, essentially.
Exactly, but as soon as he gets to the bottom, he's then back off another FTP.
Funnily enough, James had a similar story of trying to follow him off the start of BC Bike Race the other week.
Right, yeah.
He was like, oh, I'm on the same line here. I'll follow Neil. Hang on his wheel, I think he said, for about 15 minutes, which I thought was incredible in his first race. And then was like, yeah, no, I'll see you at the finish. Like, just the ability to keep that power going is insane, which obviously both of those athletes have.
Yeah, I think it's they reckon Pogačar has a resting heart rate of roughly 37 BPMs. But when we're talking about physiology as well, Nino, like we said, is a lot stronger. And I've actually done, me and Blake did his gym session the day before we did those VO2 max things. And he also has been really public with what he does. Have you seen the videos of him doing his, what's it called? Like cognitive recovery.
Reactions and stuff like that.
And he also, in those times I've done stuff with him, he's been very public about giving us all the GoPro, all the heart rate, all the power data. He does not mind. And he showed everybody what he does for training. Whereas Pogačar is definitely, well, obviously they've got a team as well behind them. So they're a bit more cagey with things like Strava, which I think is quite an interesting take on it. Where Nino's like, dilly boots, have a go. If you think you can do this, just go out and do it.
If you think you're hard enough, kind of thing.
Yeah.
What that strikes me is like just a massive amount of like self-confidence, right? Like a guy who's obviously very confident he can back up his performance on race day, or knows that maybe in his training he's got another 5-10%. Because you always find a little bit more on race day, right?
I think it's also like the skill-wise of it. Like you say, it's the mental game that he's willing to play. In that he'll give you the data. Like cross-country racing, I think this is the big difference. I mean, my minimal knowledge of road cycling, but the big difference is in road cycling, it's so data-driven. Like if someone has an FTP or they're pushing out that number of watts, you're not going to beat them up a hill. Like like if you have less, you've just got less. There's nothing else to differentiate the two people. Whereas when it comes to cross country, let's say he's got that power and someone goes, oh, well, I've got more power. He's like, well, yeah, don't worry about it. Watch me down this hill, because his skill levels are so much higher. And so it's that balance in mountain biking, which I think arguably, if you're going to talk about greatest of all time and we're talking about skill and physiological abilities, you'd sit more with Nino on that side of it rather than Tade, right?
Certainly the technical side, I think, does play a huge part.
I totally agree. But Nino was open. He said that his standard VO2 block consists of 6 times 5 minute intervals, averaging 440 to 450 watts. So pretty precise. And he said, that's what I do. You know, if you think you can beat it, go and have a go. And also, obviously, Nino has been around he's just retired from World Cup racing, but he's been around a lot longer. Tadej Pogačar is only 27 years old, and he has won an awful lot already.
Yeah.
So when it comes to greatest of all time cyclists, you know, he's got a long way to go, Tadej has, to win this. What about other people? We talk about people like Tom Pidcock and Mathieu van der Poel that cross between those worlds quite successfully, and Alan Hatherley's gone the other way.
He's
taken the money and gone to the road.
He has, yeah. Like, I think that's interesting because both have, like, Van der Poel's done very well. He's had a bit of a rough patch more recently with a few crashes and stuff, but he had a stint where he did very well. You know, Tom Pidcock seems to be able to just turn his hand to it at kind of any moment. He just dips back in, does incredibly well. Although I have noticed he sort of, you know, he comes back for Novo Mesto where he's always done very well. So maybe there's favoured tracks where he knows he can succeed a little bit more. But yeah, like I wouldn't put them in the same bracket as Nino or Tadej either though. They're both incredible riders. Van der Poel may be slightly closer to Tadej in terms of like his crossover ability in cyclocross, cross country and road riding. Very good. And I think Van der Poel, again, my limited road knowledge like yours, like classics, like one day stuff and things as well, I think he's done very well at, but like big tour stuff.
I also think like we are comparing apples to oranges here. I think it's quite interesting that cross country racing is pretty simple. XCO is just an all out race.
Yes.
It's 100%, here you go, pretty much. A road race, you could be out on the road for 6 hours. You've got teammates, you've got mechanicals.
Well, you've got earpieces in as well.
You've got all that. And then you've got a ride along 6 hours, very fast. Maybe in a bunch a little bit. But then someone like Tadej will then stick in a 400 watt attack on a mountain that might gain him 10 seconds. But then you start all again the next day with the new jersey on potentially. But away you go again.
But that's why I feel like Cape Epic is the only thing that could be compared to in terms of you've got a teammate.
Yeah.
You don't really, you have like slight team tactics, yeah. but you don't have like, you won't be in communication with like a team car or anything like that. And you've got 7 days where like the leader's jersey could swap around and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have said it's exactly the same. It's just our version.
It does feel like tactics potentially are the arguing factor to the skill. We talk about the skills in the cross country, but Nino very much, and well, any of the other XCO guys are one man bands. They have a huge team behind getting them set up for the race. But at the end of the day, when they get on the line, it's them versus everyone else, same as in all the other mountain biking disciplines. Whereas in the road side of it, yes, they're individual riders, but they literally form teams that drag the general classification rider around some of the stages, around the sprints, and protect them. There's way more going on than just 21 days. And so maybe that's the other thing, because that rider doesn't just have to be able to perform on like a climb stage. They've got to specialise almost across. That GC classification is really, really hard and very specific.
With cross country, we don't really see, you know, I guess courses are all fairly standard nowadays, but some are slightly more elevation than others, or they're at altitude.
You don't really
see sort of specialists. If you're good, you're good. And you sort of, sprinter on the road, you don't really see much variety in the mountain bike world.
Not in the same way that we see on road. You wouldn't have person who specialises in one aspect compared to another. I think there are certain courses who will, you know, suit certain riders more than others. You know, we'll take Pidcock and Charlie Aldridge, a great example, should we say. Charlie Aldridge is 6'4", I think, big old dude, 90-odd kilos, proper powerhouse.
Yeah.
That's why we see him do really well in short track and in XCO as well. Yeah. You know, Pidcock might show up at like 25, nearly 30, 25 kilos less.
Yeah.
You know, be an absolute whip it up the hills. So I think there are certain courses, but it's not the same. But I mean, what I would like to see is Pogacar come over.
Yeah, that would be insane.
Let's put the call out.
There's no amount of money that would allow him to come over. Can you imagine how protected that guy is?
I think he's a bit busy at the moment as well.
I mean, maybe not right now.
I know there's no like communication really in races, but do you see at the weekend, the under 23 race in the pits, that rider come bombing through and
clip the other one?
Down hard.
Yeah, straight into the barriers.
Yeah, I mean,
you not see? Did you see it?
Fully committed.
It's the second most controversial sort of pit lane incident this year. We had the other guy taking the hard pack route. But did he get disqualified? He got a time penalty.
Got docked.
That was in the gang, yeah.
So there you go. Anyway, so we'll get back to mountain biking. But I think it's interesting. I do sort of keep half an eye on the road stuff. Particularly, you know, one side of our office are big roadies and they love it. They're actually sat out there watching it now, not doing any work.
Sounds about right.
Did you know that bikes are good for you? Hands up.
No.
There is a survey on cycling and mental health by CyclePlan found that 75% of respondents reported a boost to their mental health after cycling. 91% of people found off-road riding fairly or very important for their mental health. Somewhere between fairly and very, I think. Which is, I mean, do
it's
we
quite
all...
quite broad.
Yeah.
It's quite a broad range.
Well, it's, yeah.
It's fairly good. Yeah.
Is it important to you, Neil?
I think it is, yeah. I think I sort of forget sometimes. Maybe when I haven't ridden for a while, then I'm thinking maybe I do need to get out. But do you know what I mean? It's not something I come back high-fiving myself every time I go for a ride. So I go for a ride by myself.
Oh, well done, Neil. Well done.
But I definitely think it is.
I mean, I agree. Now my life's a little more busy and stuff with other bits and bobs going on that having the time to go out and ride and maybe a little switching off, escape, kind of all of the above.
And we get it. You know, there's a good comment here, but we'll get into it in a second because also there are incentives. So not only does it feel good, it might also pay or give you some tax incentives around the world. But let's start with the feeling good thing, because Krusty Rides commented on my video a few weeks back about giving up my e-bike for a normal mountain bike for a few weeks.
Yep.
And he said, I'm 42, about 4 years ago, I was feeling crap, sluggish, knackered all the time, overweight, depressed, etc. I considered an e-bike so I could still get out and enjoy a ride, but decided I was going to invest in my health and started working out 3 times a week, walking and riding every weekend. I quit vaping, barely drink and eat clean 90% of the time. Now feeling much better than I have in years, basically, which is good to hear that people are still using bikes to sort of turn things around.
Well, so, I mean, what it sounds like there, which is incredible, by the way, congratulations, but like he's used the bike, whatever version it may be, as a as a tool to better himself, which I think is well good.
I think it causes a lifestyle shift as well. I think that's probably the biggest thing that you see in mountain bikers. Well, I think any person who picks up a hobby, but bikes, I think, really lend themselves to it, is by doing mountain biking, your lifestyle shifts. You do things to better your weekend ride. Mm. So for instance, you're like, oh, I want to be, you know, I really enjoy riding my bike. So what else can I do during the week that's going to mean that that ride's going to be even better? So you start training to mean that your ride is better on the weekend.
Also,
so
people can't afford to do anything else.
Exactly. Yeah, true that. True that.
He wanted to, baby. He had no money left over.
Ran out.
I mean, the other problem is bikes are annoyingly addictive.
So much.
Well done. You've got into bikes. You've now got no money left over. But also, like, you do a little drop and you're like, oh, that's pretty good. I want to do a bigger drop. So then you're like, you just go full committed and you get a bigger drop. And then you're like, oh, I'm going a bit faster. I need more protection or, like, you know, more, better helmet, whatever. And you just, it's like a vicious circle that we're all enjoying being trapped in.
Yeah, endless endorphin rush, isn't it? It's amazing.
But now for even more benefits, because we've seen a couple of governments cotton on to the health and the psychological benefits of cycling. For example, in the UK, it's around walking at the moment, but the National Health Service have announced incentives for people that walk, they're calling it a marathon a month. So trying to encourage people to walk 30 minutes a day. They've not said yet how these incentives work, what the rewards are for doing it, but that is TBC.
Okay.
Interesting that obviously it is good for the National Health Service as well, because the more people doing more stuff like this, the less they will need the National Health Service. But if we go over to Copenhagen, Denmark, they've got a thing called Copenpay, which is an initiative for people who opt to commute and use bikes to be more eco-friendly and physically better commute. They receive vouchers for free coffees and even lunches.
It's not bad, is it?
Is that a free McDonald's, do you think?
I don't know. Neil, what if I'm feeling a bit travelly? I say I end up in Brazil and I've gone and robbed a bank, but I still want to keep fit.
Well, some bad news. They will probably lock you up for that. But luckily, there's another incentive in Brazil where prisoners can earn time off their sentences by riding a bike, static bike. They haven't got any pump track or anything like that. There's no ski lifts. If they ride the bike for 16 hours, they can take a day off their sentence whilst also generating electricity for the jail and local area.
I mean, it's good, is it? I mean, obviously, maybe I shouldn't commit a crime in the first place in Brazil.
Not in Brazil. I wouldn't go there to rob a bank.
It's good for the communities, right? I mean, that how cool is that? You're getting reduced amount of electricity bills, things like that. It's reducing that. And also, it's kind of teaching, giving someone a skill who's in jail. They're going to come out Tour de France ready. Yeah. Can you imagine? Brazil's Tour de France team is going to be flying.
10 years' time.
Watch out.
10 to 15 years, depending on the crime.
Maybe a bit longer, depends what they've been up to. But what about the way, you know, how do you ride your bike not to reduce your prison sentence? What are your incentives?
I mean, mine, like, a few things. I'm annoyingly competitive, so one, just to like be good on my bike, and just that escapism, get out, see me friends. I ride a lot on my own actually at the moment, just with time, so it's just to sort of escape all the bits and bobs going on, have some quiet time, enjoy a bit of nature.
Social for you, is it, Berg?
Yeah, I think mainly for me, like, it's a chance for me to catch up with my friends. I've got like good couple of different groups of friends depending on disciplines and things like that, and go out with them, have a good time. And I think, yeah, chasing that endorphin rush as well, like getting the wildest moment and
like
things
pushing your limits a bit, innit?
That. It's good.
Do you find you end up talking more than riding on those things?
So this is the thing, you have to pick your group. So I have different groups for different amounts of time. If I've got a lot of time, I'll go on a slightly more sociable ride where you'll stop at the top of every climb, have a half an hour chat and then drop in.
It's like a 3 hour ride of 2 hours, no, 3 hour ride with 2 hours of chat.
Yeah, exactly. So 50-50. And then, if I want to go and do a bit more fitness, or I want to go a bit higher pace, so that I have a group of mates who are a lot fitter than I am, and I try desperately to keep up with them, and that tends to be a much more punchy ride. You just about catch your breath and then, all right, we're dropping in again. And it's 3 hours, you've done twice as much riding as the other one. So
you done?
Yeah, a bit of both. Probably I'd like to do more social stuff because it is good. There's a good crew where I ride that tends to go out a couple of times a week, but I'm much less organised where I'll just go and ride when I can, a bit like Rich, I think
that's what you were saying, isn't it?
With kids and other stuff, and I think, right, I've got a couple of hours, now I'll go, and hopefully I'll bump into some people because we tend to ride the same woods a lot. So, but often it'll just be by myself, and actually that's fine as well. I quite like...
You're a lone wolf.
Probably going a bit more epic, you know what I mean? Saving the fast stuff for maybe when I... and with someone else, or you know, just going out for a pedal. It's quite nice, isn't it? Getting out,
Just going out. Yeah,
you know, you can get out a bit later in the evening.
No bike cleaning.
No. Yeah.
At the moment.
No. Exactly.
Yeah. I agree.
I'm definitely branching into that element. I think, you know, as I'm getting older, I'm branching into the go out for the bit of an explore and enjoy a bit more. Yeah, gravel's been cool as well. That's been a new one I've taken on this year.
Moving on.
Yeah.
Wow.
I thought we'd talk about enduro racing. So it's been getting a bit of stick, the world enduro racing. And actually, I've got a video coming this weekend talking about, I don't want it to be like a hit piece. I say that in the video. Like, I want to investigate what's going on there because we've seen quite a few sort of bigger name riders moving on, either retiring or moving to downhill.
Yeah.
Having said that, I want this to be really positive. And actually, what we saw from Le Tuile at the weekend was a nighttime stage and buzzing racing, I've got to say, by the looks of it, at least from what I've seen. Great action, lots of spectators, and what I think could be a really good injection of energy into the series.
Well, where do we start?
Yeah, I mean...
Where do we start?
I think it's one of the best things that's happened to Enduro in a number of years. I think that there was a lot of concern initially when it first got suggested last year. I think a lot of people were concerned they were making a gimmick out of Enduro and it wasn't going to work. And then it happened. It's on the gnarliest stage in this wheel. You and I have both raced it. And like, you know, the floodlit side of it is so cool. It makes it so much more of a spectacle. And there were so many wild moments. I mean, like Neil said, like Instagram was blowing up with like crazy crashes and everything. Just made it way better, right?
That's it. I think logistics were a lot of people's sort of big concern. They were like, well, hang on, how's this going to be safe? How are you going to light it properly?
It looks pretty good, doesn't
it? Yeah, like the riders don't ride with lights on. Like the whole track is illuminated. Yeah. And the track is lined top to bottom with spectators because a lot of the, you know, when it's at the same time as the downhill, a lot of the downhillers and crowd from that go and watch. It is an insane place, Le Tuile, in general for enduro racing. It's big mountain, it's natural, really long stages, real physical. And yeah, like you said, the whole term, I'm going to say it, is enduro dead. It's been like floating around for a long time, but it's not. It's just not the same as, well, when we did it, what, four, five, 6 years. Well, I did a lot longer, many years ago. So it's just, I like to think of enduro as going through a transformational period.
Yeah, I don't want to give away too many spoilers because the video's coming. But yeah, there was a lot of enthusiasm from people that ride and race enduro, I've got to say. And it feels like the appetite is still there. That some of them feel a bit, what's the word, sort of hard done by the organisers a little bit. There's a bit of
some of the like the more OGs, should we say?
Yes, but I've heard rumblings of other people saying, well, the appetite is there. If they don't want to fulfil this, then someone else will come along and do it.
Yeah, 100%.
Which I think is very healthy for a sport to say.
Like an IXS kind of enduro cup.
Yeah, we'll do it if you
Crankworks
don't.
Crankworks enduro cup.
And I also think, you know, again, there was a lot of noise last year when they launched this night racing. But now this was the final stage. So it was like, it was the end of the race. The downhill and the cross country was happening, you know, in and around this. It wasn't a sideshow anymore. It was happening. It was the only race happening in the evening. And it made a difference to the overall. We saw the results there and then. And, you know, we've seen racing, Formula One. We've seen all sorts of other disciplines like skiing.
Yep.
Do things at night, which have sort of made those things more spectacular, maybe. And I probably would have been slightly dubious to begin with about doing this at night, but actually it's proved to be pretty good.
I mean, it adds an extra layer of drama. And I think the problem is before is like mostly things done at night are like deemed novelty races, right? So you're like, oh, well, this is just a novel
thing. I've done some back in the day.
Exactly,
Red Bull used to do all sorts of
they love it.
Crap races.
Yeah.
I've done twos up downhill races in the dark in Scotland where you've got your own lights. And as soon as someone is at the front, you can't get past them. You can't go round someone when you can't see where the trees are.
But this is different because it's obviously a solo person, solo track. You know, it's just you and the track. The track's lit properly. I do think there are legs in this, and I do think actually it then gives a good opportunity for something like this to be televised, right?
I was going
to
say, I think from a media perspective, I think it brings huge opportunities. You, like you said, mentioned F1 have moved races like Dubai and Singapore, where traditionally lots more like the US and the UK and European markets are normally asleep when the race would happen. So they move the race to the night, which means that the viewership's way more user-friendly, which in turn brings more sponsorship, more money, which crucially we desperately need in mountain biking. I think the more money and the more sponsors we can bring in, and I just think it's way more of a spectacle. Can you imagine they've got, you know, in F1 we see firework displays and things like that. There's so much more you can bring to a nighttime event and make it that much better.
I'd like to see fireworks.
Exactly. How cool would that be? Coming into the finish line.
Yeah.
So cool.
I get fireworks. What else could they bring?
Well, I mean, you could nighttime drinking is way more socially accepted.
they've never done XCC, have they? Short track. Because that could work. Although, I guess for timings, you don't want to then race that. Well, you could do Friday night, can you? And then race on Sunday.
You've done it overnight, haven't you? Overnight racing?
Yeah, not XCC though.
No.
You're doing,
like 24 hour stuff.
Well, I guess they have to go.
Yeah, it's kind of how, it's kind of how it works, guys. 24 hours has the nighttime in it at some point.
But that's not very spectacular, is it?
I did underground riding through that cave.
Oh, yeah.
Which again, they're looking at televising, like doing a thing from it.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Why are you going to send that to Sandbox?
That's not my problem.
About downhill racing? Can you imagine one round of the World Cup? Downhill racing is already so gnarly, but like, would that take it too far, or would that be one of those just added elements you've added in there?
I feel like they'd have to water it down to do it properly. The track could have light up bits or something.
Imagine a Fort William. You could have lit up.
LED bikes with
the spokey dokies
Tron. Oh my god.
I'm to be convinced of that, but
what, on Tron? Or
I can convince myself it's a good idea, but you know, yeah, I mean, Supercross works and
it does,
it's lit in a stadium,
but that's a bit different.
You know, e-bike racing has never taken off, but I've said this before, you know how they do like enduro cross in a stadium? They used to do Paris-Bercy. No one will know what I'm talking about.
This is a long
time ago, where they did like a funky cross-country race in a stadium with Brian Lopes.
Yeah.
That could work on e-bikes.
The Hard MTB League, this is one of the things, the race event I went and did, it took up such a small area, and their big goal is that they said you could, with enough dirt, you could build a mound high enough to...
At least through at LA Coliseum, didn't they?
Up into the stadiums.
The stadiums we've seen in these World Cups are massive.
They still do it now, again, into the stadiums, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting stuff. Anyway, let's know what you think about nighttime racing, where it should be done, in front of crowds. What could we do? What's the format? Is it e-bikes? I think it probably is. I think it's amazing. And let us know what you think about the Tour of France. Get involved in the comments down below.